Hello, hello, and indeed, yeehaw, welcome along to the Cowboy Carter episode. Yes, indeed, this is an episode all about Beyoncé's eighth album, Cowboy Carter. We're going to be talking about the A, B, and the C's of Cowboy Carter. That is A for America, B for Beyoncé, C for country, and D for discourse. Let's just throw that in there.
Oh, yeah.
Andrea Cleary, how are you doing?
I'm doing real good. I'd like to echo your
yeehaw. Are you
ready
to discuss you?
No. The honest answer is no, I'm not ready to discuss this because I still feel like I'm working my way through it. I still feel like I'm in the weeds of this album, and I probably will be for a while, but I feel like there's a lot of people who are feeling that way. But look, it's a snapshot in time. I'm excited to talk about it, though. Like, I do have more opinions and feelings about it than I thought I had on my initial first listen. And I suppose while we're here, while we're on this second Beyoncé album in the I suppose what we're calling the Renaissance trilogy, I would like to just sort of briefly return for a moment to Renaissance, the first album in this trilogy, which on our podcast review of it, I wasn't convinced by, I wasn't loving. It wasn't something that was, you know, felt like it was going to be very important to me. And I just like to correct the record and say that I have since come to really, really, really deeply love and appreciate that album. So any of the reservations I have about Cowboy Carter at the moment, I'm fairly confident that they will get kind of ironed out through time like that first record. So just a little correction of the record up top.
Okay, correcting yourself. Well, I mean, it is fair to say that, you know, there's a lot of music to get through here. This is nearly 80 minutes long, Cowboy Carter. It's 27 tracks. There's a lot happening here. There's a lot compared to even like Renaissance. How long was it? Renaissance was an hour and 2 minutes, but I don't know. We were talking for 16 tracks on that, which was a lot, but it flowed nicely. This is Cowboy Carter is much more ambitious record. First of all, if you've not listened to this album, what have you heard about it? You've heard that it's a country album, and straight up, this isn't a country album. As Beyoncé says herself, this ain't a country album. This is a Beyoncé album. So if it's not a country album, what is it? Well, I mean, it does feature a lot of country music sounds and references and palette that is in adjacent or nearby. A lot of this is Beyoncé kicking through the saloon doors of country and inviting whoever or whatever sound she wants alongside her. It feels more of a cultural reclamation. It's countrified. It uses a lot of lyrics and references, but it's not strictly, it's a lot about, like, there's a personal aspect to this where Beyoncé talks about growing up and listening to, like, I will say there's an extensive notes from Beyoncé on this record, which I was surprised by, and I'll get more into that in a bit. But she says, like, being at Houston Rodeo and hearing country music, rhythm and blues, Zydeco, black folk music. She says, the album wraps itself in pure instrumentation in a celebratory, authentic, this is the press release, authentic gumbo of sounds using, among others, the accordion, harmonica, washboard, acoustic guitar, bass ukulele, a pedal steel guitar, a vibra slap, the mandolin, fiddle, Hammond B3 organ, tack piano, and the banjo. There's also plenty of hand claps, horseshoe steps, boot stomps on hardwood floors, and yes, those are Beyoncé's nails as percussion. So there's a lot going on here because there's really an origin story to this record, right? There is, the origin story is about a specific performance in 2016 at the Country Music Awards, right?
Yeah. So I think you're dead right. This is not just a project that recognizes kind of black musicians' formative role in country music, but it is also an album about Beyoncé, the country girl, the girl from Houston, Texas, the country fan, the country singer. And this is an album that she says was, quote, born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed. And it was very clear that I wasn't. And the performance that she is referring to is the 2016 Country Music Awards with the Chicks, formerly the Dixie Chicks, in which she played Daddy Lessons from her 2016 album Lemonade. And we can take a little listen to Daddy Lessons as a reminder.
You, sleep girl.
So that is some of the performance from the Country Music Awards in 2016 with the Chicks. So tell me, why is this so important in this, the lore of this Cowboy Carter album?
This is so important in the lore of this Cowboy Carter album because it is the inciting incident, really. You know, she makes it very clear when she says it's about an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed. And she didn't feel welcomed at the Country Music Awards. She made the decision to perform that song with the Chicks, who had kind of previously been ousted from the country music genre after being vocally oppositional to George Bush and to the war on terror in the early 2000s, and had kind of, you know, gone through a lot themselves. So, you know, that collaboration in itself was a bit of a statement. You know, these are two artists, these are two, you know, a band and a musician who are outsiders to the genre. Beyoncé, not only because she is a black woman, and we will get onto kind of race in this discussion, but not only as a black woman is she an outsider in modern country, in the kind of bro country that's been kind of going around in the past decade, but she is an outsider because she's a pop musician as well. But as a pop musician, she's written this country song and she was invited to perform it at the Country Music Awards. It's one of my favorite Beyoncé performances. She obviously has a lot of very, very iconic live performances. There's too many to mention now. Ones that I watch quite regularly. I love her as a live performer even more so than I do as a album kind of artist. But this is one of my favorites because I think that you can feel in the room the power of what she was doing here. But what you felt in that room was resistance and a kind of an unkindness that was underscored by fear. And, you know, this country music today, Alex Abed Santos writes in Vox that country music today is a fight about how politics has informed the way we consume and critique pieces of art, and how politics has come to define the identity of country music. And I think that this 2016 example, and how we can chart the decision, you know, through 2016, through the Homecoming album, through Renaissance, and to now, is really interesting. She tells us not only in the statement, but she tells us immediately on the opening track of the album that she is responding to the reaction to the CMA's performance. So we can hear it in American Requiem if you skip to about 3 minutes 37 into that song. Can we stand? Look at that liquor in my hand. So this is really, you know, American Requiem, the opening track of the album. Beautiful, beautiful track that kind of goes through
sitar,
many different guises.
Electric sitar.
There's a sitar. There's some of the most beautiful harmonies I've ever heard on a Beyoncé song. And she has really, really stunning ones. But that's from the middle section. And she's saying, you know, used to say I spoke too country. Then the rejection came, said I wasn't country enough. So she's really opening this album by saying, you know, if that ain't country, tell me what is. If that 2016 performance wasn't country, tell me what is. And the problem is that people don't seem to be able to tell her what country is. You know, that there are these conventions. Actually, if we listen to just the opening of Spaghetti, this opening spoken word piece from Linda Martell is probably, along with American Requiem, like the central thesis of the album. So if we just listen to the spoken word intro of Spaghetti.
Genres are a funny little concept, aren't they? Yes, they are.
That Beyoncé Virgo shit.
In theory, they have a simple definition that's easy to understand. But in practice, well, some may feel confined.
I swear for God is God is God.
So, you know, the idea that genres are a funny little concept, of course they are. Like, even as music journalists, we find ourselves, you know, kind of resisting talking about things in terms of genre, but also they are a very, very useful concept as well. And country music, probably more so than any other kind of music, is a genre of convention.
Yeah.
And we just have to look at, even, you know, when someone goes the opposite way, the response to Taylor Swift's exit from country and entrances to pop music, to understand kind of how strict those barriers are from within the country, the American country community in particular. We saw it with Lil Nas X, with Old Town Road. We saw it with Beyonce in 2016. And I guess what was different about those two artists, Lil Nas X and Beyonce, was that they didn't necessarily stylistically break convention. I mean, arguably Old Town Road is more of a country infused pop song than a country song, but it was, you know, it was more country than a lot of country that is accepted as country today. But Daddy Lessons was as straight up country as you can get. But it broke convention because of who was performing it. This was a very successful Black pop musician. And, you know, I was watching the Needle Drop Anthony Fantano review of this album, and he brings it up like very, very early on in his response to it, when he says, like, she's from Houston, Texas. Like, she doesn't need any more reason to make country music than that. She's from Texas. And I completely agree with that. Yeah. And we saw it also, you know, around this album, in a radio station called KYKC, country radio station, refused to play Texas Hold'em on their station. There was some really gross comments from the Dukes of Hazzard actor John Schneider, when he said something really horrible about Beyonce, which I won't repeat. But he also kind of touches on this idea of convention, and he says, quote, Shania and the other folks we talk about, what they did was they were in country music and they went out. That's one thing. But people coming into country music, because I know a little something about country music, they seem to think that it's easy, or it's simple, or somehow not as sophisticated as the music they sing otherwise. And he's speaking specifically about Beyonce here. So Beyonce making this album has been seen by a lot of people in country music, but particularly by the right wing in America, as a claim by the lefties to take over what they see as like a sacred white space. The host of that conversation, Alison Steinberg, said, quote, the lefties in the entertainment industry just won't leave any area alone, right? They just have to seize control over every aspect, don't they? And that's exactly why this album is important. It forces people who have benefited from the white supremacy of the music industry, even outside of country music, all across the music industry, to recognize that Black people were the innovators, and they were the inventors, and that you can't invade a space that has always been yours. So when we talk about Beyonce making a country album and kind of, you know, course correcting popular music history, it's really important to think about her as a pop musician, but also to think about her as a Black musician from the American South. And those seem to be two irreconcilable ideas for a lot of people who are very, very protective of the conventions of country music. So I think that's what we're exploring here.
Yeah. No, I was just going to say, like, country is a genre often at war with the identity of what it is, with its traditionalism, its traditional values, conservative values, often racist values too. And it's notorious for gatekeeping, like you said there. Like, this is an accepted norm in the genre that, and like, there's an invader. you know what I mean? Like, the idea that, first of all, like, people, somebody like Taylor Swift would leave this most noble of genres and seek fortunes in pop music is one thing. And Miley Cyrus as well, who's also on this record. And, you know, who they go beyond that. But coming back, coming from somebody who is a Black woman from Houston, and who is a Beyonce, for God's sake,
and who, you raps, know, the designations, you know, who's married to a hip hop artist. Like, these are all very tricky ideas for these people.
You know, if you're not Nashville enough, therefore you're not included, therefore you're shunned. Like, that Country Music Awards performance, I think, is a kind of her Lex Luthor moment in terms of this album, the Cowboy Carter moment. Like, she says, this album has been over 5 years in the making. It was born out of an experience that I had years ago where I did not feel welcomed, and it was very clear that I wasn't. The criticisms I faced when I first entered this genre forced me to propel past the limitations that were put on me. Act two is a result of challenging myself and taking my time to bend and blend genres together to create this body of work. So that's, and I mean, it is worth saying, like, there is a lot of country here, but it's not simply a country album. This isn't like a this isn't like Johnny Cash doing American recordings, you know. It's not like I'm going to do some loads of standards. Obviously there are some very well-known covers here, but this is American music in general, like all caps. It's like, this is what Beyonce is engaging with in the main, and when doing so she's also talking about the history of black music in terms of always ran parallel and outside of genres like country and blues and rock. And like, you see that here on the cover of Blackbird by the Beatles. You're like, what's this doing here? Track two. She is platforming black country musicians who largely work outside the Nashville system, like current country artists, Tanner Adele, Brittany Spencer, Tierra Kennedy, Raina Roberts. These are people who aren't accepted by the country establishment, really. So, and Beyonce is able to do that. And I guess the other thing is, like, I mean, you're like, why is there a Beatles song on this? Well, there's a Beatles song on this, Blackbird specifically, because Paul McCartney said in the past, it was really a song from me to a black woman experiencing these problems in the States. Let me encourage you to keep trying to keep your faith. There's hope, is what he said about it. So that's why there's Blackbird, one of the most famous Beatles songs on this record.
It's interesting that I don't mean interesting in a bad way, but it's interesting that this is news to a lot of people. I think Beatles fans have always kind of known that that was the history of that song, but I guess Beyonce bringing it, like, there's probably going to be a lot of Beyonce fans who are not Beatles fans and who did not know that this is the history of this song. And I think that that's a really nice way to kind of bring in that particular part of, like, popular music history. And, you know, a white man from England singing about the civil rights movement is very, very interesting. But even just to kind of round off, I guess, the background of this album before we get into it proper, I do think that even before Renaissance, the project, the first album, you know, this trilogy introduced this idea of kind of course correcting popular music history, which is what I very much kind of view this project as doing. There was also her 2018 performance at Coachella Homecoming, in which we hear her talk about growing up in Houston and dreaming of going to a black college. And you can hear it on the album if we just listen to the track So Much Damn Swag.
I grew up in Houston, Texas, visiting Prairie View. We rehearsed at TSU for many years in Third Ward, and I always dreamed of going to an HBCU. My college was Destiny's Child. My college was traveling around the world, and life was my teacher. I wanted a black orchestra. I wanted the steppers. I needed the vocalists. I wanted different characters. I didn't want us all doing the same thing. And the amount of swag is just limitless. Like, the things that these young people can do with their bodies and the music they can play and the drum rolls and the haircuts and the bodies and the, it's just not right. It's just so much damn swag.
And we also, during that performance, get a rendition of Lift Every Voice and Sing, which was a 19th century hymn that became known as the Black National Anthem in America. She performs it herself, and she also has a recording of her daughter performing it. And so here's both of those. I'm looking forward to the day that we get the first recording of your son performing some Beastie Boys tracks for us all. But there is, you know, she's already engaging here on Homecoming with the idea of kind of intergenerational black popular music education. She's teaching her daughter not only to know the black national anthem, but to sing it proudly. She encourages her at the end of that clip on the album and in the concert film. You know, Blue says, I want to sing it again. And she's like, oh, you're just like mommy. Like, yeah, let's sing it again. And she's like encouraging her to sing it. And that part kind of goes into another spoken word piece from Beyoncé, which kind of punctuates that film, in which she's talking about being an inspiration for people and doing things that are outside of, you know, the pop wheelhouse or what is expected of her. And she says specifically, if my country ass can do it, then they can too. So, you know, we can understand from the context clues on in that performance, in the Homecoming performance, but also even more now, two albums into the Renaissance Project, that she is speaking primarily to young Black people who haven't felt welcome in genres of music, styles of dance, you know, even using the Black marching band orchestra as part of her Homecoming project really feels like it's of a piece with these albums. And she's really recognizing where these people and their ancestors have been originators and visionaries, but have been kind of stripped of that recognition. So this is not something that has just occurred. You know, like a lot of people who are interested in dance music and house music kind of had these conversations around the first Renaissance album, but house music and dance music are not country music in terms of where that sits in like the public consciousness in America. And so we are having these conversations now, but we've really been seeing, you know, Beyoncé laying the groundwork for this kind of thing since 2016 with Daddy Lessons on Lemonade, since 2018 with Homecoming, since 2021 with Renaissance. I can't remember what year that album came out. And now it's kind of really coming to a head. And if the next album is indeed going to be a rock album, my God, like we are going to have this conversation again. But
is that what we think is that what the discourse is saying about
that seems to be? Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine what else it would be, you know, if we're talking about you know,
American genres, right?
Yeah. I mean, and it's rock and roll, that's what it's about. Rock and roll is like the genre that was like stolen from Black musicians, and, you know, this idea of just carbon copies of it, you know? So yeah, I hope it's a rock and roll album, but anyway, back to part two.
Well, I mean, I think it's there's a lot going on here. I mean, what I would say is that I think you said, is there an audience for this record is maybe young Black folk. There is another argument that this whole thing is designed for another audience in mind, and that is the Grammys audience, because it's something that's been constantly talked about, is that she's never won Album of the Year. This year, Jay-Z stood up at the awards and was like, that's not right. You can't say this is the most heralded, most awarded Grammy winner of all time. She's never won Album of the Year. In the way that there's a lot of explanation and exposition on this record and how she approaches it, I don't think we've ever had a Beyoncé album where there's literally like a very long essay in advance written by her team and herself about what this record is and what it's about, explaining why this is important, explaining the use of certain things. I'll talk a bit about it now, pick out a bit of it now, because I think there's a lot of very interesting things here. She talks about like the recording and inspiration. Obviously, country music is there, but she talks about Southern Western culture beyond music, the rodeo, Western films, the stories of the original cowboys of the West. It was at the rodeo where she first saw diversity and camaraderie among people who love country music and an Americana lifestyle, steeped in community culinary offerings, grills and Western gear. And it was for everyone. Among the crowds were Black, Hispanic and Native American cowboys who made their valuable, authentic allowances to the culture. Their stories are synonymous with American history. The album is an experiment indeed. Each song is its own version of a reimagined Western film. She took inspiration from films like Five Fingers for Marseille, Urban Cowboy, The Hateful Eight, Space Cowboys, The Harder They Fall, and Killers of the Flower Moon, often having the films playing on a screen during the recording process. Some aspects of the percussion were inspired by O Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack, which was more bluegrass. This body of work undulates from singing cowboy and blaxploitation to spaghetti westerns and fantasy, with Beyoncé weaving between personal experiences, honouring using black history to exaggerated character building. That character, cowboy character, was birthed from these experiences inspired by the original black cowboys of the American West. The word cowboy itself is used in a derogatory way to describe the former slaves as boys and who were the most skilled and had the most hardest jobs of handling horses and cattle alike. In destroying the negative connotation, what remains is the strength and resiliency of these men who were the true definition of Western fortitude. And obviously, you know, the thing about this album, which we learned this week, is that this was supposed to come out before part one originally, but Beyonce decided with the heaviness of the world and the pandemic, it was time for a dance. So that's what we got.
I think that was the right decision. So, what do you think?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. 2022 is when Renaissance part one drops. So that's, yeah. But I mean, but this record is so much wider. It's so much more grander in scope. Like you heard that American Requiem there, a song which almost sets the album up to fail because there's no way the album can live up to that kind of grandiosity. And it doesn't try to, really. And even like you're talking about like the single, everyone's heard Texas Hold'em, and then to a lesser extent, 16 Carriages. These are more obviously country-fied songs, but a lot of the record is not like this. But it will say like there's a lot of people involved in this. There's a lot of people brought into this. There's a lot of references. I talked about how, you know, there's these new, relatively new black country musicians. There's also younger artists who are kind of occupying the zone between hip hop and country, Shaboozy and Willie Jones, who are on there. You've got big names who are big names in country music, Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton giving their blessing. And also, you know, Jolene, the cover here, which is very much like Beyonce taking back the power of the woman pleading and turning it on its head.
I want to talk about Jolene.
We'll get to the song specifically. Yeah. Actually, let's just, yeah. And then in terms of, you know, we got Linda Martell, who's the first commercially successful black female artist in country music, the first black woman to have sung at the Grand Ole Opry. She's the one who talks about genre in this, as we played there. There's Stevie Wonder. There's references to Chuck Berry. Got Post Malone is on it. John Batiste. Rhiannon Giddens, who I saw like 2 weeks ago in Vicar Street, who plays the banjo on Texas Hold'em. Of course, the ubiquitous Nile Rodgers is here. Gary Clark Jr. There's
loads
of people involved
here?
In this. Yeah, he plays guitar on one of the tracks.
And, oh, I missed that entirely.
As they do. Yeah, I can't remember which one it is, but yeah, of course he did. But I think there's a lot to be said here for the fact that like there's a lot of explanation and exposition, whether it's talking about genres, whether it's bringing in the Beatles, the Beach Boys, Good Vibration kind of interpolations. There's Fleetwood Mac, Landslide on the Miley Cyrus track. There's a lot of others. There's also an Underworld sample of Born Slippy on one of these tracks as well. So like, it's not simply that, but because a lot of what the explanation points to is maybe potentially Beyonce over explaining, as in trying to say to all of these people who are potential Grammy voters, first of all, you're bringing them in by, you know, whose baseline is very much just the appreciation of music from the Beatles, Beach Boys, Willie Nelson and Dolly Parton. It's like a 6-year-old white dude, right? And then not that this isn't a good album, but it does pander to, in a way, to these Grammy voters.
I'm not sure about that. I agree with what is being done here in that she is bringing in a lot of, you know, legacy artists, but rather than pandering to the Grammys, I view it more of a kind of a canonizing project. You know, like we go back to the decision to include Blackbird, for example, not traditionally understood as a country song, but in this new context, we sort of can understand that song as a country song. So that becomes canonized through her cover of it. But there's also a canonization of Beyonce here too, like with the Dolly Parton, Willie Nelson, Linda Martell, all adding credence to the album as a country project and to Beyonce as a country artist. Like, she doesn't need their permission. She doesn't need to bring these people in. But I think it is important for her to be alongside these people so that this is not, you know, a version of country music that Beyonce is doing, that this is maybe a step in a new direction for country music. Do you know?
Yeah, I kind of feel like I understand that point, but I also feel like these cosigns do help it get, this is going to be album of the year, the Grammys next year. You know what I mean? It's going to be, it's undeniably it's allowed because it's been brought in, it's been co-signed by these people, like big giants of music and Grammys as well, you know. Like,
I think it will win everything except Album of the Year. I think she'll get like Track of the Year. I think she'll get Record of the Year. Like,
it has to win.
I don't know.
But there's also like, there's such an emphasis here on, you know, traditional stuff as well, and like real instruments. She says, I wanted to go back to real instruments and I use very old ones. I didn't want some layers of instruments like strings, especially guitars and organs, perfectly in tune. All the sounds were so organic and human. So there is like that, like, this is real music. You know what I mean? Like, there's a bit of a, that, like, there's, this is happening.
But that's new. We're doing for this us from Beyonce, like on an album.
But yeah, but that, is that her
on Homecoming?
Potentially. But there is, it's her kowtowing to the audience that has never fully accepted her, not just country music, but the Grammys. And like, this is real music. Beyonce's using real instruments. Oh, look, we've got a sitar. Oh, look, we've got, you know, banjo. You know, it's like, I mean, I'm just, it's a possibility. It's a possibility that was part of the discourse.
It's a possibility. Yeah. I mean, I definitely concede that it can be read that way. I don't think it's the most generous reading of what it is that she's doing, but I can understand the reading. I don't know. I don't see it as kowtowing to her detractors. I think that she does obviously do a lot of explanation about what this project is, way more so than the first record in this project. You know, you mentioned the very, very lengthy kind of notes that we were given in the press release, but she also does a lot of like in-album explanation of what it is that she's doing. And I think where I differ to you on that is that you are looking at this quite rightly as an album, which it is, whereas my sort of interpretation of this is actually with this Renaissance project, this is something that is, this is a project that takes the form of an album, but is actually a popular music education project. It is something that is designed for people to have these discussions in a way that traditional albums are not necessarily designed to do so. So I'm sort of okay with the explanations, with the in-album sort of, you know, expectations of what the detractions are going to be, correcting those things, you know, getting the cosigns from other artists, because I think that what she's doing here is doing more than making an album. And I don't mean that in it, like to kind of big it up to something that it isn't. It's just different to what a traditional album is. And I think that she needs that
like
sort
this
of
album,
thing.
This album feels like a movie in a way. It's like, it's like, it has, it's like, it's missing the visuals, but it feels like a movie. When Willie Nelson comes in on his radio style kind of interlude
that.
And he presents this short compilation of well-known country and blues music that, you know, is part of the canon of this album as well. It's like the influences and nods. And that certainly suggests what you're saying there. You know, it's more about this is a project around American music and the reclamation of Black American music as well. It's like she's platforming Chuck Berry and Sunhouse and Roy Hamilton and Rosetta Tharpe on these records when she doesn't have to. But also, like, I mean, no one else could do this really. Like, the record is littered with samples and interpolations, a very expensive business indeed. There are so many, like Fleetwood Mac, I said the Underworld track, there is, I have a load of them written down somewhere. There's just like, obviously there's Blackbird. Dolly Parton apparently asked her to cover Jolene way back, so this is part of that as well. But yeah, and there's obviously the Beach Boys, Good Vibrations, Interpolated as well.
Nancy Sinatra, Lee Hazlewood, Patsy Cline, Hank Cochran.
Yeah, Buffalo Springfield, For What It's Worth, and American Requiem. There's a lot going on here in terms of nobody can really afford to do that other than the likes of Beyonce, you know. So it is, no one else could really create that discourse. And I think it's an interesting album when, you know, the discourse is nearly as interesting, if not more interesting, than the album itself almost. It's like, what does it say? And it's very rare we get these albums these days, I think, like, where it's like you're presenting an alternative history or a buttressed history of Black music through a very big, massive, anticipated pop album. And only really Beyonce can do that these days.
Yeah, the pop album as a text, I think, is is an interesting kind of venue to do this. You know, she could have very much done this as a visual album. She has experience with using visual albums as a means of storytelling or a means of like additional storytelling, but choosing to kind of keep it all within the album, I think, is very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, what's vibing for you now? What's working for you on this record?
I'll tell you what's really working for me on this record, and it's a song called Ya Ya. And it's working for a lot of other people too. So let's take a little listen to that.
We clapping. We drumming.
So for me, Ya Ya is like, it's the perfect blending together of what I expected a Beyoncé country song to sound like. It still has the Beyoncé, it still has the sass, it still has those incredible vocals. But, you know, at the beginning, she welcomes us to a rodeo Chitlin circuit, which are venues where Black performers played in the segregated South. She talks about how there's a whole lot of red in that white and blue, which I think is a great line. It's a great, good old-fashioned country line. Asks if people are looking for a new America, bringing us back, like linking back into the kind of the opening themes that we heard on American Requiem. There's a Beach Boys interpolation. There's a Nancy Sinatra interpolation. This song should be a fucking mess, but it's not. Like, it's, there's something so like perfectly contained, and it has that sort of like the pop sort of, what's the word, like accuracy and conciseness to it that I love about really good Beyoncé songs. But it's taking in all of these very disparate ideas and just packaging them up in this like fantastic, fantastic pop song that is designed for people to dance to. I think it's one of the strongest, I think it's probably the strongest track on the record for me because of all of those reasons. And it's just, there's just so much joy in it, but there's also like, there's anger in it and she's fed up. And I think a lot of this album, like Renaissance, kind of puts forth the idea that, you know, forgetting your problems and you know, dancing it out is, you know, it's a temporary solution, but it's a solution of sorts for people who are going through hardship. And I think this song is kind of very much of the Renaissance like vein in that way. So I love Ya Ya. I think it's brilliant.
Two references on this song, that one positive, one negative. I'll start with the positive. Mm-hmm. Tina Turner.
Yeah.
It's very much like, this seems designed to be a big live moment, that kind of a review medley, bringing in Nancy Sinatra and Beach Boys' Good Vibrations. You could hear this being the end of the runway, kind of everyone around Beyoncé singing and working the track. And it is a big crescendo, I'd imagine it will be in the live show.
Yeah.
A negative connotation. Not really fair, but it sounds a bit like Jessie J's Bang Bang, you know?
Oh my God. Oh no, it does.
That was the first thing I heard when I listened to that song. Sorry. And it really annoyed me because I was like, ah, no.
There's,
don't do that,
there's worse Jessie J songs to sound like, I suppose.
In fairness, there, it is a well-constructed song, no doubt about it.
Yeah, I think it's great. I love the hand clapping. I love the feet stomping. I think it's just a real... You know, it was a real moment of like, because I guess like before this came along, we were in a run, maybe from like Bodyguard on, exception maybe of Jolene, of like quite, I don't know, down tempo, quite serious country music, and that's fine, but it was a different sort of tempo, and this like really just woke me up out of that, and I was like, okay, here we go, we're dancing, you know, Beyonce.
Well, this
here.
Is track 20 of 27, yeah. So you'd want to be woken up near there.
Yeah, but I mean, it does, this is an album that does take a while.
It also comes after Post Malone's Levi's Jeans, which I think is not great. Could be anybody.
That is one of my least favorites on this record. That's a skip for me, but you know. Do you have a song that you'd like to bring up?
If I was to pick one song from this at the moment, I really like what Riverdance does. I think it's,
let's talk about Riverdance. Unique. Yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of, it's the one that uses fingernails as percussion, and it has, I don't know, it has something a bit different going on. Let's hear Riverdance.
Bounce on the shit, dance, dance. Bounce on the shit, dance, dance. Bounce on the shit, no hands. He was tangled in my arms. He was my mess, my ball of string. I would give him everything, my thunderstorm and second chances. Bounce on the shit, dance, dance. Bounce on the shit, dance, dance. Bounce on the shit, dance, dance. Bounce on the shit, no hands. Must make amends, arrest me and read me my rights. I plan to steal your heart again on Saturday and Sunday night. Pounce on the shit, dang.
It's a little bit understated. It's very vocal driven. It's got that lovely guitar bit as well.
Something quite garage bandy about the guitar bit. It's like my first sample. And I like that. I think that's very charming, actually.
The other song I would say is worth mentioning is Daughter. Because it has this big operatic run in it. It has, it's a song about revenge. Like, it's kind of talks about how, in a way, like daddy issues as well. It's like, I'm my father's daughter. Mm. The generational thread of actions of hurting somebody else when you don't mean to, maybe. But it features a Beyonce singing an Italian opera song called Caro Mio Ben, the words of which the song talk to loneliness felt by the absence of a loved one and the cruelty inflicted by one on another.
This alcohol and smell of regret allured my cage. Outfit too small to hide my scars. Feeling bottled up like bottle service brides. How long can he hold his breath before he is dead?
Yeah, so the opera there is a bit of a decoy, you know, it's not like everyone doesn't know that one. And I think that's really brave. I like the fact that they've done that and they've
taken that somewhere
else. We
heard a bit of
that
style
else.
Of singing from her on Homecoming as well. So this is something that was kind of like foreshadowed. I honestly, I've got like a long essay in me about the parallels between this album and the Coachella performance. Yeah, I agree. I think those are two songs that I was very taken by. And I think the lead from Daughter into Spaghetti is very interesting as well. I have to say, Texas Hold'em, when I first heard it as a single, it did not do it for me, Niall. I'm sorry.
It was
Lumineers ho-hey of it all that really put me off. However, hearing it in the context of this album and kind of, you know, during my first and second listen to this album, I was really tempted when Texas Hold'em came on to just skip because I'm like, oh, I've kind of heard it. Blah, blah. But I let it play both times. I was like, we're listening to the album. And I've really grown to like it. I've grown to really like it. I like where it comes in the album, comes quite early. It's quite a statement. It's not the most serious song in the world. And I think that's fine. I think that maybe, I can't remember who it was that pointed it out. It might've been actually the Needle Drop again when I was watching his review, that this is not, you know, a song to be taken very seriously as other songs in this record kind of are. And that maybe it wasn't the best kind of introduction to the album, but on the album, I really, really like it.
Yeah, and I'd say the same for 16 Carriages as well. It works better in the album than it did as a standalone song.
I liked 16 Carriages more than I liked Texas Hold'em when they were the two singles. But yeah, both I've grown to like a lot more.
Let's play a bit of Texas Hold'em for a second.
Step to the right, we headed to the dive bar we always thought was nice. Ooh, run me to the left, then spin me in the middle, boy, I can't read your mind. This ain't Texas, ain't no hold'em. Hey, lay our cards down, 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 down.
Do I love the Hohays? No, I still don't love them. I would still love if they weren't in the album, but I understand why they're there. And it's not country music's fault that the Lumineers happened. Like, that's not, that was already a thing.
Stomp. What is it? Stomp and Holler? That's the name. That's what Spotify calls this genre. Stomp and Holler. Mm.
I want to kind of bring up a theme that I recognize throughout the album, kind of lyrically, and that is guns. And shooting. And
we're talking cowboys.
We're talking cowboys. But we're also talking about a decade of police violence in America that has been at the forefront of news, politics, and activist movements. And I haven't seen much by way of kind of interpreting the guns and the shooting that exists on this record within that sort of context, which I think is interesting. You know, she's shot by a lover on Riverdance and comes back to life. She wants to ride shotgun on Bodyguard and wants to turn around and John Wayne that bitch or something like that, to turn around and John Wayne someone. On Spaghetti, she tells us, I ain't in no gang, but I got shooters and I bang bang, which I think is a kind of a reference to the moral panic around hip hop and like its relation to gang violence that still pervades culture. You know, that hip hoppers are gang members or whatever. Desert Eagle, which is a song on the
hip-hoppers album.
In popular music scholarship, we use the term hip hoppers, yeah. and whenever I say it outside of an academic setting, I forget that it sounds ridiculous. But we do say hip hoppers in the academy. A Desert Eagle is a kind of pistol, and it's in the back seat of her car on the track Desert Eagle. And there's loads of other references to guns as well. There's references to cars,
outlaws, and the westerns, yeah. And the giddy ups, and all that kind of, you know, vibe. It's the country and western part of it all. You know, it's like the
this is what I'm saying, right? America is gun country, right? American country music has a history of engaging with guns. You know, Western films are about people getting shot. Like, there's a lot of gun culture and a lot of overlap between, you know, Second Amendment people, NRA people, and country music. So the link between guns and country music is very set in stone. But the link between guns and hip hop music has always been a source of like moral panic and a lot of anxiety. And I think my sort of thesis around this album and how it deals with guns is that Beyoncé is sort of drawing attention to that sort of tension between those two genres and to the hypocrisy within those genres. You know, you can have an NRA supporting country music listening Fox News presenter talking about how hip hop is more dangerous to young Black Americans than police violence, you know, as we heard on the Kendrick Lamar's Damn album. And I think Beyoncé bringing, you know, the idea of guns from a country music standpoint is kind of drawing attention to the fact that this is part of American culture. Guns are an American problem. They are not a Black problem. Do you know? So, yeah, that's just something I sort of like I had in my head listening to it, because I really was like, there's a lot of backseats of cars and there's a lot of guns. And backseats of cars is kind of something that I think that's just a Beyoncé thing. Like we've heard it on Partition. We've heard it kind of on other tracks as well. But the gun thing I found particularly interesting because she's not an artist who has really engaged with that sort of rhetoric within her music. So I thought that was noteworthy.
But like, I mean, for part one, it was like the way there was so many fashion references on it. It was like you're embodying this world and this is part of that world, so you can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. And guns is maybe part of that as well.
Yeah.
Now, obvious question, you think this album is too long?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I definitely think it's too long.
What would you take off?
What would I take off? I would take off, I have a kind of a controversial one. I think I'd take off Alligator Tears. That song hasn't hit with me just yet, but it might in time, but it hasn't. I would take off Levi's Jeans.
Yeah.
A few others. If you asked me 2 days ago, I would have said that I would have taken off Jolene, but not so much anymore. I find Jolene fascinating. But
yeah, I mean, like,
there's a few I would take off this, or I would put on maybe the bonus disc just to make it a bit tighter, just to make it a bit like Renaissance, the first album in the project. Obviously, it was working within a genre of like house music and dance music designed for, you know, each song to lead into the next song and for it to be able to listen to like as a piece. We don't get that here. And I don't think we need to get that here, because this is a different genre. This is not dance music. This is not designed to be listened to in a club. This is designed to be listened to, you know, in other scenarios. But I still think the sequencing of the album is a little bit off for me. I think there's a bit too much kind of slow.
That immediately
stuff
happens
together.
When it goes from American Requiem into Blackbird, and you're like, whoa, what?
Blackbird being the second track on the album is a wild decision.
It is crazy. Right?
Like, it's like that feels like it should be in like the latter third. I would put Jolene before Blackbird, but I suppose, I mean, I can understand the desire to have Blackbird as the second album. Like it is a very emblematic song of what she is trying to do with the project, but it's very strange in the second song on a Beyoncé album to hear so much of another artist singing, which I find interesting. But yeah, I do think the sequencing is off. You probably could keep all of these songs on it if you just sequenced it a little bit differently.
Yeah, whether it means anything or not, interestingly, Spaghetti, Flamenco, The Linda Martell Show, Yaya, and Oh Louisiana are not all missing from the vinyl album. So whether this is
a case of that. They
restructured the track listing after when it was too late, or if it's a mistake, or which potentially it could be something about, I mean, it doesn't make sense that Beyoncé would do this, but like the limitations of vinyl means that they wouldn't fit on something. But and that does happen a lot. But with Beyoncé, it doesn't seem to make sense to me that she would leave off a song like on the record, as it, unless it was a later edition and there was something that wasn't cleared or they weren't sure. So they just went with this version of it. So that was interesting.
Yeah, it might have been a rights issue. Like it could have, it could have been anything, but I can't imagine it would be, you know, a mistake. You know, it's interesting.
It seems unlikely. It seems unlikely.
But I will say, just while we're on the sequencing of the album, I think that American Requiem and Amen, bookending the album, are the most perfect opener and closer of any Beyoncé album that she has recorded. Like, absolutely.
Yeah, well, it's got that circular effect of like it repeats itself. Yeah,
they are
the
excellent. They are
almost
like
intro outro.
Yeah, yeah. But not even just for that. I think everything that you hear after American Requiem is informed by it, and everything that you know going into Amen is informed by what you've just heard. Like it's contextual. It's beautiful. It sounds like nothing else on the album, but still sounds like of a piece. I think they're excellent bookmarks to this album. And I don't think this album would be as compelling or as meaningful without them. I think they're integral to understanding this album are those two bookmarks.
Yeah. The Jolene cover. Yeah. I mean, it's a cover in a way, but it's a reinterpretation really, right? So it takes the power back on the song. Like we all know what the original is, but like Jolene, 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 I'm warning you, woman, find your own man. Jolene, I know I'm a queen. Jolene, I'm still a Creole banji bitch from Louisiana. So, you know, she's doing her own version of this, and it wouldn't be like Beyonce to in a way this echoes Lemonade, right? It's like the idea of Becky with the good hair, all the stuff. That's what Dolly Parton talks about the start of this, you
in
know,
a very very cute. I think Dolly's little moment where she's speaking about Jolene and Becky is adorable. I think it's so sweet.
Yeah, it's cute. It's nice. And it's nice because, you know, she was there, she did that originally, she is giving her blessing on that as well, and and encouraging her to do Jolene. Whether Beyonce owns it is a different thing altogether. Whether it's something that would be, it's not like, it doesn't transcend the original, it's an alternative take on it. It's a really hard song to cover and make your own.
I think I have a lot of feelings about Jolene. My first feeling was when I first heard the lyrics and how she changed them was to kind of resist it. And I was like, oh, I don't know. You know, a lot of people, I'm far from the first to point this out, but, you know, what makes Jolene, Dolly's Jolene, so singular and truly, truly singular is the perspective of a woman begging another woman not to take her man, you know, putting the power in the hands.
So vulnerable, here.
Putting the power into the hands of another woman. And almost sort of like there's almost a kind of a homoeroticism about Jolene, and there's a lot of really, really interesting, intricate sexual politics that happens on Jolene that has never been done in a song that I've heard. Again, it is a singular song. It is one of the best songs ever written. And I think my resistance to Beyonce's Jolene was that, you know, she had kind of stripped away all of that kind of interesting, you know, those interesting kind of sexual politics. However, I do think that when we think about Jolene, like Jolene is not Becky. Becky is a different woman. And Becky, for a lot of fans, and we do not have confirmation on this, but Becky for a lot of fans is a white woman. Like Becky with the good hair has been understood by a lot of Black Beyonce fans as being a white woman. And I think when you understand Beyonce's Jolene as a Black woman singing to a white woman, I think it changes the context of it. Like they are different women. There are different sexual politics at play when this situation is happening. So I have more time for Beyonce's Jolene than I had before. Like in that first sort of like resistance, I was thinking, you know, Jolene is a woman who Dolly Parton kind of believes to be so much more beautiful than her, who believes to be, you know, kind enough that she would listen to her plea. Like she's this kind of otherworldly beautiful being. And then here comes Beyonce saying, well, she's not hotter than me. She can't satisfy my man. But I think that when you listen to it, not as Beyonce speaking to Jolene, but as Beyonce speaking to Becky or her version of Jolene, which is made kind of explicit in the Dolly Parton intro, it makes the song different enough that I don't think we need to have that conversation about what is stripped away from this song. We can actually think about what is being added to this song by Beyonce. And I think one of the best things that was added to the song by Beyonce was the sort of extra bit with the male voices. And do we need a male perspective on Jolene? No, absolutely not. But there's something about the, I actually just really like it as part of the song. It sounds like it was originally part of the song, you know, the I'm a stand by him, he's gonna stand by me moment that comes later on feels like that was always in that song. And I think that that's a really, really impressive thing that she's done, is to add something to Jolene that feels like it is of it. So I'm not as resistant to it, but I understand the sort of, you know, the tension that comes there, or the disappointment maybe that she didn't engage with it in its kind of original form, and how brilliant that original form was. But, you know, Dolly has given this her blessing, which I think is very important. And Beyonce is not Dolly Parton. Like, she is a different artist, and her Jolene is a different woman, and this is a different scenario. So do I need to hear Beyonce sing about how hot Jay-Z is? No, I don't. But I also don't think that she's necessarily talking about Jay-Z. I think it's a problem when every time we hear a Beyonce track singing about how hot her man is or whatever, that we don't actually give her the benefit of like playing a character.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's definitely characters. She's playing cowboy characters. Yeah. Like a tyrant with Dolly Parton coming in saying, time to strike a match and light up this juke joint. You know, she's not, this is a character.
Yeah. And I have a bit of a problem with like how fans are interpreting Bodyguard as being about Beyonce having an affair with her very, very hot bodyguard, who does exist and is gorgeous. He's a gorgeous man. But like, you know, these are characters, and we should afford her the freedom to play characters on this album, you know. She's not Beyonce, like, she's Cowboy Carter.
Bodyguard also in a way like subverts that expectation of, you know, Whitney Houston's Bodyguard.
Yeah.
You know, like it's like, I will protect you. Beyonce is doing the opposite again. Like Jolene, she's protecting her man as opposed to the other way around. So like it's a very easy, here's a very powerful, strong woman actually taking care of business kind of thing.
Yeah, and taking care of her man. I hadn't thought about it like that as the Whitney Houston connection, but I think that's so right, because you go from Bodyguard into Dolly P and then into Jolene. So I think that's a really interesting kind of interpretation of those three tracks together. Yeah, I like that.
And Bodyguard is interesting as well, because it could point to a potential sound that you could get on Act 3. Mm. It's more of like a country pop light in the style of Sheryl Crow. Let's listen to a bit of Bodyguard actually. So yeah, slightly different vibe there.
Is Bodyguard the one where the verses sound like Smooth by what's his name?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah,
Rob Thomas
and Santana.
Yeah,
I don't know if they get a credit on that, but I think they definitely should. It's very
everyone else has.
Man, it's a hot one. Like the verses. But I mean, one of my favorite songs of all time. So 100% not a detraction. Yeah, I mean, I guess, what else do we have to say about this album, Niall? Like,
I think it's more interesting in a way for me to talk about than listen through all the way. It's so, there's so many annotations and things to discuss as part of it. Mm. I've been really enjoying reading the reviews of it as well. And this is like, you know, it's great for, it's a Black Friday for critics when they can talk about these records in this really interesting way. And like there's so many think pieces and reviews that are worth reading. Mm. I enjoyed Doreen St. Felix's New Yorker review at the end. She talks about the character she embodies on Cowboy Carter, that of a diva with something to prove, is a delicious role for Beyoncé because it cracks open a psychological window into a relationship to race, power and creativity. It lays bare a vulnerability 27 years into her career. Why isn't it a mark of distinction to have your performance removed from the official social media accounts of the CMAs? How powerful would it be if she stopped going to award shows, including the Grammys, altogether? Mm-hmm. The best song on Cowboy Carter is Sweet Honey Bookin', which I don't agree with, but which takes the tragedy of I Fall to Pieces by Patsy Cline and flips it into an edgy Jersey club banger. This is the Beyoncé I'm most drawn to, the fantasist going non-lexical, twirling around her gaze and her girls. But this is Beyoncé too, still loves the glow of institutional recognition. There is a line on that track that references the album of the year. It goes, album of the year, I ain't win, I ain't stunting about them, take that shit on the chin, come back and fuck up the pen. And this review ends with Doreen St. Felix said, that's a line that's written to age poorly. So yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people have picked up on that. Obviously Beyonce has referenced it herself on this record. It'll be interesting to see what the I'm sure she'll get the album of the year. I'm sure she has to. Like it has to happen. Like she's, you know, Cowboy Carter is like Linda Carter. You know, she's the superhero. She's bound to win, I'm sure.
We have a Swift album in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. She seems to be a lot more...
Well, it certainly won't be as interesting as this.
Probably not, but she does seem a lot more of an easy choice for the Grammys to go with for album of the year. So, I mean, look, we're early into the year. If she wins it, I think it's going to be great, but she doesn't need it.
No, but it's more like she says, I'll take that shit on the gym, but I think there's an element of this where she does care a bit about this.
Yeah.
And that's okay. I think I would think it would be better that she doesn't show up. I'd love to see that. I'd love to see her just ignore.
I like that idea of her not going to award shows, but then I'm also like, you know, then who's winning there? You know, is she really winning?
Well, she's not winning anyway. She's not getting rewarded.
I mean, in culture, who's winning by her, you know, taking herself out of a situation or a space that has never welcomed her, you know? But I think, yeah, for me, my first listen to this album, like I was really, really unsure. But like you, the more I sort of look into the references and, you know, we're two white Irish people. There's going to be a lot on this album that we don't, that doesn't immediately make itself known to us.
I'm certainly not versed in country music.
Yeah, me neither. Like I'm a fan of country music, but I have to be honest, most of the country music I listen to are old white guys. So that was sort of, you know, that was revealing for me as well. But the more I listen to it, the more I like it. There are definitely songs on this that I will clip out and playlist and kind of listen to that as my Cowboy Carter. But I think as a project, this is a really powerful and worthy, you know, second act in this Renaissance project. I'm so excited for the third one. And I really think that no one else is doing it like her. You know, I can't remember who it was. It might have been in the Pitchfork review. I don't know who it was, but somebody pointed out that she is the most interesting artist from the 90s still going today. And I was like, holy fucking shit. She is. She's an artist from the 90s.
Don't do that to us.
And I think that she is someone, and I think this was referenced in the Pitchfork review, who could, you know, lean into just like, you know, kicking back, being a legacy act now. You know, she's had like, you know, a career beyond anybody's imagination when she was in Destiny's Child. Like she has been the conversation in music since Lemonade, you know, like there was that was kind of a real turning point for her. But even before that, she was, you know, this massive, massive cultural figure, not just a musician, not just a singer, but a cultural figure and somebody who can sway the political conversation. And I think that's why it's so important that she is carrying out this project and she's seeing it through. And I find myself more enamored by Cowboy Carter than I expected to be initially after my first listen. So it's a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think you're right there. It's worth, you know, stating that case. Most people could just rest on their laurels. Beyonce does not do that and makes it interesting, keeps music interesting, keeps pop music interesting.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to refract and talk about the history of American music in 2024 and country music and pop music, it's a noble thing that she's doing. She is in that position. She has fairly unlimited resources in terms of, you know, the people on this record that she can call on, whether it's, you know, her close collaborators like Pharrell and or Rhiannon Giddens or Raphael Sadiq or Jean-Baptiste or Miley Cyrus or Stevie Wonder or Nile Rodgers, who's on this record as well. So, you know, there's loads of people there. Obviously, Jay-Z is on it, The Dream, the usual. But I think what she does is always interesting and always worth talking about, which, you know, I can't quite say for Taylor Swift myself.
And just a final note on the record, this is my favorite Beyonce album art by a mile. I think the artwork itself is
her, you know, it's like the American flag is cropped out. Mm. It's the red part. It's the Confederate almost part of it.
We're keeping the horsey.
She's coming in. Yeah, coming in, side saddle, reclaiming Black American music in a way. I think there's a lot to be said for that. Mm. She is an auteur in lots of ways, the way she brings people in.
I'm going to buy it as a poster.
Yeah.
It's a beautiful cover. I really, really love it. And then, yeah, so the next one, I think the horse is going to be like rearing up. So on Renaissance, the horse is like on all of his four paws, feet,
yeah.
Not paws. in this one, he's galloping. I think for the third one, he's going to have his front feet in the air and he's going to be like, what is that called? Rearing? I'm not a horse girl.
Rearing up.
And she's going to be in leather and she's going to have an electric guitar that's on fire. She's going to be wearing a Metallica t-shirt. It's going to be amazing.
Well, I look forward to part three whenever that...
Me too.
Act three whenever that comes out.
Me too.
So that is Beyonce, Cowboy Carter. Yeah, that's it from us this week, I reckon. Mm-hmm. We are back next week with a deep dive into an album that we are going to be presenting as a listening party on the 24th of April. So that album is...
That album is Fiona Apple's debut album, Tidal.
Indeed. So we'll be discussing that next week in a deep dive.
Can people buy tickets for that yet or...
probably maybe by tomorrow I'll have that up. Okay. So if I do it today,
keep an eye.
There'll be tickets on niler9.eventbrite.com. It's limited to 40. So yeah, come along. It's a fun time in the Big Romance on the last Wednesday of every month, and we'll be talking about Fiona Apple's title. And patreon.com/909 if you like what you hear and you want to support us and you want to also be part of a nice little community as well. I've talked so much about, you know, Patreon in the past. It's a nice thing to be a part of. You get a bit of community. You're helping support us financially as well. These things are important. These things, you know, time is money and all that stuff. And and I was talking to a pal of mine who was like saying, you know, we have to pay for the things that we want to support. And mm-hmm. We certainly appreciate when people do that as well. So thanks for that. And also, if you're in town in Dublin City on Saturday night, the Lumo Club is happening at Workman's Cellar. So final shout out for that. That'll be our first time in the Workman's Cellar. So yeah, come along if you're around town. Right. That's it. That's Cowboy Carter. That's Beyoncé's Act 2 of the trilogy. Andrea Cleary, thanks so much.
Thank you, Niall.
And we will talk to you next week.
Bye.